You're listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Today on Recovery Buddies with David, we are continuing our conversation about the OA Fellowship. And in particular, it's time to discuss crosstalk, what it is, and why it's harmful. In addition, I'll share how crosstalk played a role in my losing the pink cloud, though, to be fair, over the last year, as I've reflected on multiple instances of crosstalk that I've witnessed, I have to concede that there truly is a paradoxical quality to crosstalk. In a meeting, it is almost always harmful, but there have been times when crosstalk accomplished some good, and so the infraction was allowed? Tolerated? Permitted? You choose the word that best suits your stance. There's a lot to cover, so shall we begin, dear listener? The ideal share in a meeting is experience, strength, and hope. Whenever I have been asked to give a speech at a meeting, the majority of the time, the only instructions I receive from the speaker seeker is, tell us your story and share your experience, strength, and hope. Whether my speech is 10 minutes or 25 minutes, I always prepare what I'm going to say in advance because I feel more comfortable organizing and planning out my share. As a side note, this is the same reason why when making plans with friends, I tend to put forth suggestions often weeks in advance. That's who I am, and I like being organized. It's one of the ways in which I demonstrate to myself that I've grown up. My desire for organization and preparation is a discipline that serves me and punishes me, but that's another topic for another episode. Getting back on point, the guidelines for speaker shares are surprisingly similar for individual shares. Generally, during an individual share, a person is expected to talk for a few minutes about how they are working their program. Most meetings even include instructions that encourage people to speak with their sponsors if they're having difficulties. It's a subtle but polite bit of instruction that is often overlooked or ignored by many people, even those who have been in recovery for years. There have been many meetings where I've witnessed someone share about the difficulties they were having in their life, sometimes about program, and sometimes just about the events of their day or week. This kind of venting/complaining about a person's life and experiences often draws complaints from members of a meeting. Though I have observed the people who complain about someone sharing like this often engage in this type of infraction themselves when it suited their purpose and what they were dealing with in their lives at that time. In short, disregarding the guidelines for a share is acceptable to most people when they feel the need to do so themselves. And as such, some of these people come off as hypocrites when at later times they complain about someone else's share. This is perhaps the mildest example of crosstalk, but it is also probably the most common since I hear about it during outreach phone calls quite often. Though when we consider a person who shares in a meeting and talks about the struggles in their daily lives, we need to be honest and admit that none of us arrived at our first meeting with strength and hope. In fact, most of us showed up in a miserable state of existence because we've hit rock bottom and received the gift of desperation. For newcomers, their initial shares may feel awkward, which makes sense because they're trying something new. Perhaps they feel embarrassed and reluctant, which, again, is totally natural. And they probably feel vulnerable admitting their struggles and mistakes to a room full of strangers. But speaking for myself, my initial shares were very short on strength and hope. And yet, being given the time and space in a meeting to talk about or dare I simply say, complain about my daily affairs, brought me the first measures of relief from the spiritual pain that radiates throughout many of us as a result of our harmful, addictive behavior. In my experience, both from when I was a newcomer and over the past 3 years that I have been going to meetings, the newcomer's share is usually something like, I'm suffering, I'm afraid, and I need help. But this can also be the share of someone who is in relapse or about to tip over into relapse because they are struggling to maintain their serenity. There were times over the last year when my shares leaned more in the direction of, here's what I'm experiencing and what I'm struggling with, rather than, here's my experience, strength, and hope. Living in the state of serenity and recovery does not mean that we never again feel challenged or have to work on character defects. We will all have bad days and make mistakes, and when we do, even if we have years of recovery and knowledge to call upon, it is important that we can go to meetings and share our suffering, fear, and need for help. So, to be clear, I am more disagreeing than agreeing with that line of instruction from the meeting scripts that tells people to speak with their sponsors rather than share their difficulties in the room. Over this last year, I'm sorry to say that I couldn't always find it in me to go into a meeting and share about my struggles, especially when the meeting itself was the setting for the events that triggered those struggles. That's like walking up to someone and explaining to them why they are the problem here, not you. And while there are certainly times when that course of action feels justified, the philosophy of OA instructs us to stay on our own side of the street and to not try to control the behavior of other people. The policy regarding crosstalk is perhaps the most expressive and direct example of keeping to our own side of the street. And I think the no crosstalk rule is why, when someone shares their difficulties and struggles, rather than their experience, strength, and hope, that no one should cut them off and admonish them for their less than ideal share. So, I am saying that the no crosstalk rule supersedes the if you are having difficulties, we suggest you speak with your sponsor rule. Moving along with this examination of how the fellowship polices our interactions, let us consider how most meetings transition from script reading into open shares. There is always a point in the meeting where the person serving as chair says something like, feedback, crosstalk, and advice giving are discouraged here, followed by the stipulation that crosstalk during an OA meeting is giving advice to others who have already shared, speaking directly to another person rather than to the group, and questioning or interrupting the person speaking or sharing at the time. Those instructions may seem forward, but crosstalk is easy to do even when the type of behaviors that constitute crosstalk are spelled out plainly like that, because it feels natural to want to talk to someone directly, especially when they share that they are struggling and in pain. Humans are social creatures. Even those of us who identify as introverts derive joy from social interactions, which is why recovery meetings can offer hope and strength to even the most awkward, shy, and fearful among us. Because we stop being alone in our suffering when we attend a meeting, and we start seeing that there is a better way to live. It's that second part that I think people should try to focus on. At least, that's what I want to take away from a meeting. I want to be shown that there is a better way to live free from compulsive desires. And that's what I try to show to others in meetings when I'm asked to speak and share my experience, strength, and hope. But surely, oh surely, talking to someone directly, out of kindness, sympathy, empathy, or as a friendly jest, or just casual mentioning can't do any harm, right? Sorry, but I have to report that it is harmful. I know, because I've seen it harm others, and I have been harmed by it myself. This past November, in fact, I experienced how harmful crosstalk can be. On November 17th, I attended a Thanksgiving holiday event at work. We were encouraged to wear ugly Christmas sweaters for a contest, and to bring food to support the potluck lunch that my co-workers would be sharing. Now, I knew about the food and ate before heading over, so I wasn't in danger of being tempted off of my food plan. However, sadly for me, during the entirety of that event, no one would sit with me. Now, it's not that anyone went out of their way to be mean or intentionally say something harmful to me. I was just invisible, something I've experienced a lot throughout my entire life. This is a polite ignoring by people, and there is something understandable about it. After all, people are very uncomfortable around morbidly obese individuals, and this kind of shunning has followed me pretty much my entire life. Being invisible in a room full of people that I work with is one of the clearest and most consistent examples of why the claim, "What matters is who you are, not what you look like," is in fact false when it comes to people who are basically strangers. So that afternoon, when I got off work, I was feeling rather disappointed in the holiday event. It was with a heavy heart that later that evening I went to an OA meeting that I attend regularly. I was hoping for acceptance from my friends and comfort from the sound of their familiar voices and, well, also relief from my sore emotions. That meeting began, like pretty much all meetings do, with the reading of the opening script, followed by volunteers reading the 12 steps and traditions. Then a random woman, who I had never seen before, was preparing to read the 12 steps, and she decided to crosstalk by saying to me and the entire room, "Oh, we have a monster in the room. David, you're quite a monster and look very scary." That's true. That's what she said. Talk about dropping a bomb on my already disappointing day. As a side note, there was more than just those two events that happened on November 17th that resulted in it being a very awful, terrible, no good, bad day. But that's a story I'll cover in a later episode in which I'll discuss how this most recent holiday season was quite difficult and challenging for my recovery, so expect that episode next month. Returning to the topic at hand, that woman later explained that her comment had not been intended to be cruel, and that she was merely reacting to the illumination off my computer screen, which apparently had created a kind of green glow to my face and body. And while she did not know it when she made the comment, I had just come home from a very painful experience, and I was not in the mood for this kind of comment. I remember saying, "Oh, hell no," and turning my camera off. A friend attending the meeting saw my reaction and texted me the following, "You okay? That was so rude of her. I'm sorry she said that." I replied, "That was very rude. It hurt. Thank you for messaging. I'll turn my camera back on in a minute." If not for that friendly outreach, I might have left the meeting. Later, when the meeting progressed into shares, multiple people in the room crosstalked to directly speak to me and tell me that I'm not a monster, or they made it part of their share to comment that they like monsters, or that monsters are just misunderstood. Until, finally, the woman who called me a monster decided to share and for a second time crosstalk by directly speaking to me so she could explain her comment and state that she didn't mean to insult me. Basically, I became this unofficial focal point of the meeting, and the crosstalks just kept piling more and more uncomfortable, embarrassed, and shameful emotions onto my head. I felt like I was being buried under that pile of dinosaur excrement from that scene in Jurassic Park with Jeff Goldblum. Now, I fully acknowledge that that woman had no way of knowing that my day had been rather horrible, and I don't think she had malice in her intention when she made the comment. Her apology was quite sincere, but if she had not cross-talked, then an apology would not have been necessary, nor would I have become the focus of so much attention. Granted, sympathy, kindness, and compassion are positive attentions that we should give readily and in an altruistic manner to each other in order to foster fellowship, but crosstalk is not an effective tool for delivering such things, and, as it did in this case, derails the meeting from focusing on the well-being of all individuals, and instead becomes all about a select few individuals, or one individual in particular. So ask yourself, dear listener, when you come to a meeting, do you want to become the focus of the meeting? And how would you feel if you were attending a meeting and you saw that a couple of people were the focus of the meeting? Are you going to find recovery there? Would you feel welcome? Would you feel safe? This is one of the ways that crosstalk is harmful. And it's not just casual comments that might do unintended harm. If you engage in crosstalk where you either recommend something to someone or give them advice, you run the risk of appearing like you're ordering someone around rather than offering acceptance. There is a real danger when it comes to giving advice and instruction during a meeting. You may think you're helping someone who already shared by lending them your support, but your comments, no matter how well intended, have the potential to be harmful. In normal conversation amongst acquaintances and friends, the back and forth commentary on each other's statements is one of the most pleasant and enjoyable things in life. We are, after all, social creatures. But commenting on someone else's share can, and usually does, harm when it occurs in a meeting that is specifically about recovering from addictive behaviors. Permit me to share another example to illustrate that point. Often I've seen in meetings where one person crosstalks by saying, "I really liked that last share," and then goes on to detail what they liked. This is a very mild infraction. It can last only 5 or 10 seconds as a throwaway comment, or it can go on for a minute in the form of meta-commentary. That's the act of commenting on yours or another person's statement to either further explain or interpret that information provided. Snuck my teaching hat on for a second. Either a short compliment or a prolonged meta-commentary are both examples of crosstalk. And they can be harmful because other sharers may feel the pressure to praise other people, or they may feel resentment that their shares were not praised. This kind of mild infraction can ruin an official meeting by slowly unraveling the security and unity of the meeting over time. It is a corrosive form of crosstalk that seems innocent but slowly eats away at the foundation of the meeting's order if it is tolerated. I have seen such infractions bring a large meeting down, reducing attendance from the high 40s and 50s to less than 10 people because those people did not feel safe and at peace in the meeting due to the mild but consistent amounts of crosstalking going back and forth amongst the regular attendees of the meeting. The OA 12 and 12 addresses this kind of subtle, corrosive crosstalking on page 92 when discussing Tradition 1. Quote, "A respect for unity means that individuals keep in mind the rules of the group. We may want to talk for longer than is suggested, or we may feel that just have to share our advice with someone in a meeting. Tradition 1 tells us to curb those impulses for the sake of the group." End quote. In other words, even the kindest of intentions should be held back if those intentions instigate crosstalk. The 12 and 12 goes on to explain that, quote, We don't try to confront or fix each other. We save the more intimate details of our lives for one-on-one discussions with our sponsor. It is every member's responsibility to protect the OA spirit of unity and mutual support. When it comes our turn to lead an OA meeting, Tradition 1 makes it our responsibility to lovingly remind members of the group conscience if it is being ignored. End quote. For the first two sentences of that quote, this, in general, is a good policy to follow. However, I would now like to share an example of when sharing the more intimate details of our lives and a subsequent crosstalk infraction occurred and did a great deal of good for me. Though, for the record, I fully acknowledge that I was technically wrong and that the person who crosstalked should have waited until the meeting was over before he spoke directly to me. Allow me to share what happened. There was a time about 2 years ago when I could not get anyone to listen to me one-on-one about a terrible experience that I had in a hospital. I had reached out to multiple friends I'd made in program, asking them if they would be willing to hear me read out what I'd written about the experience, and none of them were available. Then one afternoon, I found myself sitting in a men's meeting. My emotions at the time felt tortured by what had happened, and my inability to find someone who was willing to listen to my journal entry felt like nails being dragged over a chalkboard inside my heart. And then the thought came into my head that I should just read the entry aloud to the men's meeting. So I did. I even told them to just let it go in one ear and out the other, and the fact that they allowed me those 2 minutes to read what I had written was one of the greatest moments of acceptance and love that the fellowship has ever given me. My voice shook and broke a couple of times as I read the words, and as soon as I was done, I turned off my camera, put my head down on my desk, and started to cry. It was cathartic, and proved to be the necessary action that allowed me to let go of the shame, pain, anger, and fear that I felt from what happened in that hospital. Those men, in bearing witness to what I had written, set me free from the lingering feelings that were haunting me. So while I agree that we should try to follow the policy of not talking about the events of our day or week in meetings, sometimes we need to allow exactly that. Because try as I did back then, again and again, no one else was willing to listen. The fellowship is not perfect. It will fall short and fail us at times. And when it does, we need to allow a bit of flexibility and understanding towards ourselves and each other. Now, if I wanted to come to a meeting and always read out my journal like that, sharing those intimate personal details, that would be wrong and should not be tolerated because it would violate Tradition 1. Continuing with the story, immediately following my share, the next share began his turn by saying, "I know this is crosstalk, but I'm going to do it anyway." And then he said, "David, keep your head up, man. It will get better." He was one of the founding members of that men's meeting, and sadly, in the 2 years since then, he has passed away. I did not know him very well, and truth be told, there were times when I did not like him very much, but his act of compassion that day, as I sat there with my head down and tears burning my cheeks, I will never forget, and I will always be grateful that even he, was willing to speak a kind word to me. Sometimes the no crosstalk rule keeps us from being compassionate towards each other, and I fully agree and support that it is a good rule and should be followed during the meetings. But the reality of the online Zoom meetings is that you can't come up to someone after a meeting for a one-on-one conversation the same way that you could if you were attending an in-person meeting. But yes, he was wrong. I was wrong, and it did some small measure of good. That, too, is part of the paradox of crosstalk, and part of what makes it so alluring to the point that if indulged and tolerated, it can bring down a meeting. We hear in the scripts for most meetings that the newcomer is the most important person in the room, and it is to the newcomer that I think we owe our consideration and compassion, especially when it comes to the no crosstalk rule. It takes tremendous courage to come to a meeting, and even more to speak up and share. The fellowship needs to be of service to each other and hold space by being silent and attentive, not just during a person's share, but after they are done speaking. That is the service we need from each other. The security of anonymity and safety to speak without fear of commentary. That is so much more helpful than giving advice or praising a previous share. We never want anyone to feel judged, and the only way we can practice listening to each other and to the principles of the program is by knowing that what we say will not be responded to, because any response has the potential to offend, shock, and injure someone. Recently, a good friend, the wise rabbit, shared with me a quote that says, "If you are willing to look at another person's behavior towards you as a reflection of the state of their relationship with themselves rather than a statement about your value as a person, you will cease over time to react at all." End quote. I think that's a wonderful goal to aspire towards, and it brought me some guidance and comfort one afternoon after I attended an OA body image meeting where cross-talking occurred. At that meeting, the story being discussed had to do with how certain women use excessive body fat as a way to hide and stay safe. Now, the author of the story made it clear that women who are overweight will draw less attention from men, and thus, those women feel safer. During my share, I began by stating that I understood what the author meant, but I wanted to make clear that that is not how extra weight works for me. My obese size has never made me feel safe. It only made me someone to be excluded and easily attacked by others. Speaking for myself, and for many of the other men I have talked to over the years, being obese never offered us any protection, only pain. My point is that I acknowledged from the beginning of my share that the story was not written for me or about me and my experiences. But despite my efforts to preface my comments, later in the meeting, there was a woman who cross-talked and directly opposed my comments, even going so far as to insinuate that I had offended her during my share. This was a very dangerous crosstalk. She was directly reprimanding me in an open meeting about body image. We are not supposed to invalidate each other's experiences and struggles, and despite my effort to make it clear that I was approaching the reading from my own perspective, which, yes, is the perspective of a male because, you know, that's what I am, I still came under attack. Thankfully, the leadership of the meeting intervened and made it clear that I was welcome at the meeting and that every share would be respected and crosstalk would not be permitted. And I was very grateful for that acceptance and protection. Along similar lines as that quote that the wise rabbit shared with me, there is a quote from For Today that says, "I treat myself and others with respect, and I do not react in kind to people who behave badly towards me. My self-worth comes not from others, but from myself, from caring about my own opinion, and about what I do and say. All that I am and hope to be comes from giving myself the time and the patience, compassion, and understanding to grow." End quote. That's the attitude and type of action that I try to take when it comes to dealing with other people in meetings, or just throughout any given day. Should a person treat me with hate and cruelty, I try not to let them push my buttons and give them the reaction that they seem to hunger for in their own sickness. And when I do this, when I don't react in kind to people who behave badly towards me, then I remain the arbiter of my own actions and reactions. I'm the one defining myself and living up to the principles rather than personality. This is one of the ways in which I honor my Rule 5. Only you and God get to define who you are. And my Rule 14. Say what you mean what you say, and don't be mean about it. There is an unofficial OA meeting that I attend once a week with friends from program. Sometimes there are a bunch of us there, sometimes it's just three or four of us. But again, let me stress this is not an official meeting. It is just us agreeing to get together and work our programs. The purpose of the meeting is twofold. There is the socializing that we engage in at the beginning of the meeting for about 15 minutes, and then for half an hour or more after the meeting has ended. The other part, or rather the program part, is to conduct a step study of the OA 12 and 12. It is an unstructured, informal meeting. We all leave our microphones on so that we can hear each other snicker and laugh because we are trying to replicate what an in-person meeting would be like. And we have lots of crosstalk. We refer to each other's shares. We build off each other's ideas. We go back and forth. But we are able to do all that because we are friends. We have connections to each other and genuine altruistic affection for one another that we've built up over the last 3 years. This unofficial OA meeting has given me the most amount of recovery and support than any other meetings over this last year that I've been struggling with my program. I believe that my spiritual and mental growth as a result of working my program needed an addition of this kind of informal, friendly interaction. An approach to working program that allowed a level of socializing and support that is not possible in a formal meeting. And I am not arguing that official meetings should be run this way. Not at all. I am instead sharing that if you are as fortunate as I have been to make friends as a result of working program and learning how to give acceptance so that we can form meaningful connections, then you can have this kind of progress when it comes to recovery. You can have people who decide they want to commit to you and others as a group of friends, that they will volunteer their time to spend with you for the enjoyment of being together as well as the enriching experience of sharing recovery together. That meeting is both a spiritual and social experience for me. It is fun and enjoyable, and it drives back the compulsive urges and triggering feelings like a massive tidal wave, shoving them far, far away. One of the most important conclusions that I have come to over this past year is that I need to accept that I need help to maintain my abstinence from compulsive eating. And the fellowship has a role to play in that maintenance. If I can approach the fellowship with the right mindset, healthy boundaries, and expectations, refraining from crosstalk, and forgiving people when they crosstalk is one of those healthy boundaries that needs to be maintained if I am to successfully work my program and live a healthier life free from compulsions. The bottom line is this. When I'm lonely, I become depressed, and then I want to eat to feel better. This is a constant about my nature. But while I am powerless to change this about myself, there are things that I can do each day to actively combat it and prevent the compulsive desire from being triggered. For a long time, I was angry at the fellowship for using words like friend, family, and love while cross-talking in traditional meetings. Because while individuals might have used those words, they never treated me that way. The failing was that their words did not carry the meaning and authority that my words do. This was a barrier between us. Neither good nor bad, just a barrier that divided us and will always divide us because barriers, like fences, can only be torn down when both parties agree to do so. Now, what does all this have to do with addiction and crosstalk? Crosstalk is more often than not harmful and can be triggering. It can drive people back towards their addictions because of the pain inflicted upon them by the fellowship. But none of us, not I, or you, dear listener, are entirely powerless because there are things that we can do to be free from old bad habits. When we suffer an injury from someone in the fellowship, we do not have to turn to our addictions for relief. I remember the insanity of being lost in addiction, growing worse and worse as the dark trap took me deeper towards ruin and further into isolation. The amount of disconnection from other people that results from my morbid obesity, a direct result of my overeating, is akin to a waking death. I am alive but ignored, present but invisible, seen but not included because I do not fit, I do not belong, and I am unwanted. This is how people outside the program make me feel. Even today, after more than 300 pounds lost, because I still have hundreds more to lose. This is the nature of my day-to-day living. There is a significant part of each day that wrestles with loneliness and isolation, and so does not radiate with strength, hope, and serenity. My point being, I tried walking away from the fellowship, and it brought me perilously close to the edge of relapse and the nightmare that would entail. But the fellowship cannot give me what I dream of, so it must only be a tool to stand against the madness, that and nothing more. The question that helped bring me back into a calm, comfortable state with the fellowship was, do I accept what triggers me to want to overeat? And am I willing to take action to prevent that trigger? My answer is yes, I am, because I know that I deserve to be happy and healthy. And most important of all, I know that my health and happiness can only be achieved if I believe it is possible and am willing to work hard for it. But that is not self-will. That is accepting what is necessary and letting my higher power guide me, educate me, and sustain my efforts. So I encourage everyone, go to a meeting with your heart open and your mind willing to believe in yourself and your recovery, and don't let anyone's comments, either directly or indirectly, push your buttons, because life is a journey. And when you have the courage to work on improving yourself, then the journey can be one of joy and serenity, not fear and isolation. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. I thank you for listening and hope that you enjoyed what I had to say. Remember, dear listener, you, me, and everyone in this fellowship is worthy of recovery. You can have a relationship with food that leads to a healthy body. You are worthy of that. All it takes is time, consistency, and willingness. I'll talk to you next time, buddy. You've been listening to HP3R, Higher Power Ranger Recovery Radio. All recovery, all the time. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review. If you'd like to send us an email, then write to hp3rpodcast@gmail.com. Remember to tune in on Thursdays for episodes of Daily Dose of Recovery, and check back on Mondays for future episodes of Recovery Buddies with David, here on HP3R.